KBPS on PRP is now the Student Hour. The Student Hour, student radio for the city of Portland. Join us as we hear from students across the metro area and beyond. The Student Hour is powered by AM 1450 KBPS at Benson High School. For over 100 years, KBPS is the voice of the Portland Public Schools. The Student Hour is brought to you by Portland Radio Project, your nonprofit community radio station, 99.1 FM, and streaming online at prp.fm. This is the Student Hour.
Hello, everyone. I'm Justin Spreen, a part of the KBPS student staff, and I'm here with...
James.
Thank you, James, for coming in. I'm going to interview you about something interesting that came up recently on my radar. It's about Ford deciding to actually keep the AM radios on their 2024 models. How do you feel about that?
I feel amazing, because they shouldn't have even threatened to remove it in the first place. AM radio is our is what our school is on, so of course I feel strongly about this.
Yeah, and another real thing that's good about AMs is that they're used for what you know as the EAS, the Emergency Alert System, and it helps communicate with the world. Well, actually, not the world, but like the citizens of Portland to know what's going on. So it's a really good thing for quick news.
And this is good that we're keeping AM radio so that we can keep what's said to the people to inform them and educate them.
Yeah, I mean, even radio stations have a lot of impact. Like, for example, KBPS, we have PRP, a McDaniel's Showcase, a Children's Hour, a lot of stuff to really communicate with the people of Portland.
Yeah, and I'm glad that people will actually be able to hear our radio in their new cars.
Yeah, so remember, everyone, if you see a 2024 Ford model, I say buy it because you want to keep supporting AM. All right. Again, I'm Justice Freelander here with...
James.
Signing out from the KBBS radio station.
My name's Aviana Frazier with the AM 1450 KBPS radio station, and I'm here with...
Malaya LaSour.
Okay, Malaya, so tell us about your weekend.
My weekend was pretty great. I went to the University of Oregon for track.
Why?
Because I won in districts. I got first in the 100 meter, and I got second in long jump and triple, and second in the 200 meter.
And how long have you been running track?
This is my first year, so basically a month and a half.
That's crazy. And how did you get there? What did you do to train for that?
You know, running, my eating's not really right, but, you know, just putting in the work with, like, running and working with my coaches.
And how does it feel to, what did you finish in state?
I got eighth in the 100 and the triple jump, and I got seventh in the 200 meter dash and nothing for the long jump.
And how does that feel?
I feel amazing. I got 3 medals on my first year doing it, and I made it out of, like, there was, like, probably, like, 20 people in every event, and I got 8th and 7th, and I felt amazing.
It's pretty good. Do you wish you started earlier?
Yes, because I feel like I would have been way faster than what I am now, and better and more advanced, so, yeah.
I think that's it. All right, thanks. Thanks for sharing.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, I'm Joe Anderson, Benson High School student body president. Recently, alongside my principal, Mr. Wilson, I spoke to the Portland Public Schools Board of Education regarding a hopeful change of our mascot from Tech Men to Astros. Here's that audio.
Next up, we are going to vote on a new mascot for Benson Polytechnic High School, Superintendent Guerrero.
Thank you, Chair Scott. Good evening, directors. Board policy provides criteria and conditions for naming and developing representative images like mascots for district properties and programs. Renaming a school nickname or school mascot should be made after careful and deliberate consideration by members of a school community. On behalf of members of his school community, Benson High School Principal Curtis Wilson submitted a formal written request to engage in a process to identify a new mascot to represent the school community. This was coordinated with their area senior director, assistant superintendent, and the chief of schools to submit in writing a formal request. Earlier this month, I met with Benson administration and student representative, who you'll hear from in just a moment, to understand the process that they went through to eventually land on a recommendation to change the Benson mascot. I'm going to let Principal Wilson and our Benson student leader share with you about a little bit more about their process and how and what they landed on as the proposed mascot for Benson Polytechnic High School. We're not talking about the name, we're talking about the mascot. Principal Wilson?
Thank you. My name is Curtis Wilson, Jr., the principal of Benson Polytechnic High School, and I want to thank you for giving us the opportunity to come and meet with you all this evening. I do have just a quick letter that I want to read that I think will explain why we're here and for this process in regards to the mascot change. So this is a letter that I submitted to the superintendent after working with our students and staff over at Benson. So the letter to the superintendent, in 1908, the Portland School of Trade, later known as Benson Polytechnic High School, opened. Benson started as an all-male school, and the nickname was Techmen. As the years went on and women began to attend Benson, the nickname changed to the Tech Man and Lady Texters, or just Texters. The nickname over the years has ranged from a worker dressed in overalls to an astronaut to just a space helmet. However, the nickname has never been officially changed from the original Tech Men. As we begin to move into our new building in the fall of 2024, we will start a new chapter for Benson Polytechnic High School. I believe that in conjunction with the students and staff of Benson Tech, it is time for a new nickname. To be clear, we are not looking to change the name of the school. We are looking to do something that is more inclusive to our student body. We are very prideful in the orange and blue. We wish to remain Benson Polytechnic High School. However, we are proposing changing the nickname to be more inclusive and better represent all of the people and the students and the staff that make up the Benson Tech community. Some nicknames have already been proposed by the staff and students and alumni, such as the Technicians, the Innovators, the Thunder, the Tigers, and so forth. But it is our wish to start this new nickname process with Portland Public Schools as soon as possible so that the new nickname can be integrated into the construction of our new building. So please note that I have received enough feedback from our students and staff and alumni, and I'm comfortable asking PPS to start this process to change the Benson Tech nickname. As I stated earlier, this nickname will be more inclusive. We are a very diverse school. If you've ever been inside of Benson Tech, our students are very, very diverse. And they've made it very clear to me that if we go back to our new building in 2024 and they do not feel accepted, they will let me know. Okay? So, I've worked with the alumni, I've worked with our community, I've worked with our students, I've worked with our staff, and I believe that it is now time to change our nickname. As an athletic community, we need a symbol that we can hang our pride on. Right now, we are conflicted, and we would like to take this time to come to a thoughtful decision regarding our new nickname that we can recommend to the superintendent and in turn can then recommend to the board for a final decision. And so this is our ASB president, Joe Anderson. We've started the process. We've been working on it for the last few months. We've narrowed it down to our new nickname. I feel very confident that it will grow on people in time. We have always been conflicted with who we are.
No, we haven't.
This is our yearbook, right here. And if you can see, there's an astronaut on it. We have never been able to integrate Techmen, Lady Texters, or Texters with the space helmet or the astronaut. So what the students and staff have now done, they have decided on a nickname out of the 400 that we started with 3 months ago. We've narrowed it down to just one from 400 participants that gave us 1,200 nicknames, to 10, to 5, to 3, and now we have one, and that nickname is now the Astros for Benson Tech. And I would like to let Joe Anderson speak on that because he's been with me from the very beginning as a student voice.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. My name is Joe Anderson. I'm the student body president of Benson Tech. As you said, I've been part of the nickname renaming committee from the very beginning. I've attended every meeting, seen every email and document, and I can say with full confidence that every decision and action taken was taken with our students, their values, beliefs, and guiding principles centered. After many rounds of voting from our stakeholders, staff, community members, alumni, and students, we landed with the name Astros. And I feel that this is the most representative and affirming of all our stakeholders. Astros are very closely associated with futurism, forward thinking, and innovation. I connect this to Benson Tech because I know that as our markets, our economies, and our workplaces evolve, Benson and our career technical education programs will be right alongside any changes, and will continue to provide our students with the very best current industry standard knowledge, skills, and equipment so that all of our students may find success in their post-secondary pursuits. It is for that reason that I believe that Astros is the most representative of all our stakeholders. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for being here tonight. Do I have a motion and a second to adopt resolution 6710 to change the mascot of Benson Polytechnic High School?
So moved. Second.
Director DePass moves, Director Konstam seconds. Is there any board discussion? Vice Chair Hollins is not allowed.
I just want to thank you all for teaching me why the Houston baseball team is called the Astros. I never knew why until, I never thought astronauts, Houston, we have a problem until right now. So thank you for educating me.
This many years old when you
realized. I'm 46 almost before I figured that out. Thank you.
I'm really happy to support this and appreciate you both being here. And Joe, I appreciate the time you spent with me at the tech show, the 100th tech show this year. And perhaps Mr. Hollins would maybe feel better if he could maybe get a sweatshirt that had the Astros on it.
It
might make it a little easier for him to take.
Go ahead.
So, yes, as an alumni of Benson Tech, I'm kind of perplexed that Mr. Curtis will propose this. But I get it, you know, he's not a tech man. But no, I will part, you know, with the texters only because, you know, when the community and the students, you know, look for change, we have to change. You know, when the community and our students, mostly our students, wants to go in a new direction, you know, we're here to support, we're supposed to be here to support them. So I will reluctantly be voting yes. But I appreciate all the guys have done. I like the thought process. I got all those surveys and I voted every time. But I do appreciate what you guys have done. I love the fact that you guys came together as one unit to look at what could be the future for Benson. And as a old techman, you know, I support you guys. So I will be a reluctant yes.
Well said. Thank you. I'm excited to vote for this. Director Bruce Edwards.
So I'm happy for the Benson community. I'm going to support it, although it'll be just one more name I'm going to have to stop and think about, because in 1977, I played against the first lady texters. It's a long time to retrain myself from. But as we said when we started this journey, when we originally changed Franklin's mascot names, names of mascots are important symbols of our schools, and they need to evolve. So Gary, as I told the Franklin community, They can always be Quakers. The alumni can always be Quakers, but the students now are going to be the Lightning. And so you can always be a tech man, but the students going forward will be Astros.
In all honesty, we really didn't know what tech man is either, so it's always confusing too.
I do want to, so I'm going to support this. I think it's an important change, and thanks for the work you did guiding us through. But I also want to put on the record that I continue to be disappointed that the Lane community request to change their name dates back 6 years. I.W. Wells, McDaniels have had name changes. Now Benson has a new mascot. Franklin has a different name. Lane followed the policy and got in line, and they've were asked to wait. And students earlier this year asked to present to the board. There's a new process. It starts at the school, so they went back and started again. And it looks like the process is going to result in Lane being named for another school year, named after Joseph Lane. And I just think it's important to note that Joseph Lane does not deserve to have his name on one of our schools. He was our first governor of the Oregon Territory, a U.S. senator, a candidate for vice president, in 1860 on a slavery slate. He was an outspoken and controversial defender of slavery, and it's a shame that we have one of our schools named after him, and I hope we can expedite the process so that the Lane community members can also be proud of the school name that they attend.
The board will now vote on Resolution 6710 to change the mascot of Benson Polytechnic High School. All those in favor, please indicate by saying yes.
Yes. Yes.
All opposed, please indicate by saying no. Student Representative McMahon.
Yes.
Any abstentions? Resolution 6710 is approved by a vote of 7-0 with Student Representative McMahon voting yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And can I just add one last thing? We have researched all the names. Texters does not exist.
Yeah.
And our students made that very clear when they came to me years ago, is that if I'm a texter, I don't exist in this building. And so we had to do a lot of researching and making sure that we were moving in the right direction, and we were very thorough that we're very happy with Astros.
Great. Principal Wilson, you got your vote. Congratulations. Thank you, Joe.
If you'd like to support the Student Hour, please consider donating to our program at kbps.am and donating to our sponsors, Portland Radio Project. Your support of PRP helps programs like the Student Hour stay on the air. For more information, go to prp.fm and click on the big red heart.
Good day, listeners, and thank you for listening to the KBPS Hour. My name is Zip, and I'll be continuing my semi-weekly segment where I review a song from an artist's album that was released recently. This week, I'll be doing the song Bright Sadness by Sleeping At Last. It was released on April 28th and produced by Sleeping At Last. Let's take a listen.
A bright sunrise through shattered glass. A fountain of youth slipping through the grass. I drag my feet through perfect sin toward a future I no longer understand. When my daughter's collection of broken shells teach me I can still learn lessons if I myself. I'll be alright. Been a year at the mercy of a merciless tide. But now we're here, clothes barely dry. We return to the ocean one more time for you. In the water, we pay attention to one another. In the water, lives forever.
Bright Sadness by Sleeping at Last is a poignant and introspective song that explores the complexities of emotions that come with experiencing loss and grief. The lyrics paint a vivid, relatable picture of someone trying to come to terms with the pain that they are feeling, acknowledging that there is a beauty and clarity that comes with the sadness and touching the heart of every listener. The gentle piano melody and the delicate vocals further emphasizes the fragile nature of the emotions being portrayed. The song's title itself, Bright Sadness, is an oxymoron that perfectly captures the juxtaposition of emotions being expressed. Overall, Bright Sadness is a moving and thought-provoking song that invites listeners to reflect on the duality of emotions and the role they play in their lives and successfully convinces them, myself included, to open their hearts to the emotions they feel and live as the true, authentic versions of themselves. My name is Zip, and I'll be back on next week's KBPS Hour.
This is the Student Hour, student voices for Portland, powered by AM 1450 KBPS.
Hello, this is Colby with the KBPS Radio Center, and today I want to take some time to review Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. Now, I've been playing this game since, well, the night it came out, and while I have to admit I am pretty underwhelmed with it as a whole, I find it very fun. I feel like there's not enough uniqueness to the game for it to be good, like, to the extent that I wanted it to be. Now, with Breath of the Wild, Breath of the Wild is the only Legend of Zelda game I've played. So, I have to admit, I'm a little uninformed about Legend of Zelda. But, with Breath of the Wild, there was enough uniqueness and fun there for me to really love it. But as I'm playing through Tears of the Kingdom, it feels a lot like just Breath of the Wild with a few differences. And while that's not necessarily bad, I don't think it's that great. There's a lot of fun things about the game. The boss fights are fine, kind of easy, honestly. I thought that'd be a lot harder, but they were a lot more unique. And I'll give it credit. I'll give the game credit for that. That's actually the one that I didn't like about Breath of the Wild, is all of the boss fights in the, I guess you could say, like, dungeons, divine beasts, whatever you want to call it, were pretty basic. I mean, they were all the exact same model, just with different abilities and maybe a few, like, small things that made them different. But I do like that in Tears of the Kingdom, it has original-looking boss fights, and while they're not that great, I do still find them really fun. And again, the thing I love about Legend of Zelda games as a whole is it lets you do what you want to do and not what the game really wants you to do. Like, there was one boss fight where I knew what I had to do, but I didn't like that, so I did it my own way, and it made the boss fight so much easier. Or doing the shrines. You know, there's certain ways I should be doing the shrines, but I didn't want to do it, so I did it the way that works for me. And that's what I love about Legend of Zelda. You know, it's really fun because you can go and do whatever you want to do, however you want to do it. You can beat the whole game in probably 2-3 hours, or you could spend months playing the game and never beat the game because there's so much other content, so much places to explore. Like, there's tons of quests. There's one quest where you have to go to every stable in the game and do a side mission for that and get some pretty cool armor that will help you later on with exploration. There's finding wells and reporting that to someone who loves wells. There's helping someone install signs for a construction company. There's just exploring the world as a whole. You climbing to the top of Death Mountain, going to the depths, which is really unique. The Sky Islands, too, are really cool, although I feel like they're not really well used. Personally, I've actually never really gone to them except for the opening mission and to get to somewhere else a little quicker. But, like, I've never really felt like I need to explore them or there's really a reason for me to go explore them. Same with the depths, too. I mean, they're cool to explore, but overall, they're not anything special or unique to me. I feel like there was a good idea with the Sky Islands and the depths, but it wasn't well executed. Now, it's not necessarily a bad thing that, you know, I don't find it interesting because I'm not a massive Legend of Zelda fan. I haven't played any of the games except Breath of the Wild. So, you know, if you are a massive fan of Legend of Zelda, like, love every aspect of the game, I know you're going to love this game. I love it too. I just feel a little underwhelmed. But what really stands out for me is the combat. you can now fuse items to your weapons to increase durability, increase damage, and I love that. It feels so much better, and it honestly adds a bit of uniqueness because a normal weapon can now have ice powers, fire, think electricity, and you can infuse it with gems to have to like release the magic of those gems onto your weapon. And it's really fun and really unique and can add for some really interesting ways to approach combat. And I love that. That has to be generally by far my favorite end of the game. Same with the building, but mainly being able to fuse weapons. Like overall, I find the game to be very fun, very interesting, very unique. This has been Colby with the KPBS Radio Center. Thank you for listening.
The Synthesis Essay, the largest and maybe the most grade-shifting assignment of a senior's year in high school, and also a genuinely good opportunity to expand one's knowledge on pretty much any topic and prepare for some aspects of college life. Which is why I would like to take the time of this introduction to thank my AP English language teacher, Ms. Brewer, for giving this as an assignment. I certainly can't speak for the many students here who have used AI to cheat on valuable material, but I, for one, can say that I greatly appreciate this material. So, without further ado, this is Video Games and Their Influence on Political Decision-Making. Video games have become firmly rooted into developed society, especially among younger generations who are beginning to involve themselves in the principles of society and also beginning to change those principles. And yet, video games have also remained relatively unsuspected of having any sway over our political activity. Video games, in fact, have a significant amount of influence on our political decision-making in terms of what real-life political occurrences, trends, and discussions happen that also have a sound connection to video games. Given this premise, one must understand the size and scale of the video game industry so as to set some kind of an example of how large and influential this particular industry has become. According to the economic statistics website IBIS World, the video game industry has more than doubled in size since the year 2013. It currently has a market size, in terms of revenue, of more than $108.6 billion. The same source also indicates that this growth of the market size in the video game industry is slower than that of something like the information sector. While one might be inclined to believe that this slower growth indicates less strong of a presence in the world of the consumer, this can actually show stability in the market. Businesses with the opposite characteristic to this, such as Tesla, for example, have historically experienced extremely erratic changes in value at a fast pace. As described by the investment platform MacroAxis, Tesla stock itself is 4.93 times more volatile than NYSE Composite, with stock prices soaring and tanking regularly. What can be concluded from this, especially the stability of the growth, is that the prominence of video games is not a fad. Not at all. With that kind of economic mass and stability, video games are just as firmly rooted into developed society as the premise would suggest. But in what way are video games deserving of such magnitude? What can video games be described as using an all-encompassing term? Video games, at their core, are social gathering spaces, ones that bring about the same sort of social interaction that real-life social gathering spaces do. But online multiplayer games, the kinds of games that have these aforementioned spaces, also have a certain element of randomness. A player can be put in a position where they are able to communicate with another player whose beliefs are completely opposite to their own, at random. Games such as Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 and PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds feature voice chat, which allows all players with the proper equipment to speak to each other as opposed to using text. The significance of this is that the verbal communication that this brings about allows for tone to be understood in a way that text cannot convey, making the real intent of the person's message much clearer and much more accurately understood. With this more sound understanding of tone, listeners can come to a more certain conclusion on the speaker's opinions and beliefs. An opposing argument to this might be the simple fact that video games are entertainment, designed explicitly to be a distraction from that which has real-life consequences, and that any attempt made by a video game creator to incorporate intentionally political material will be warped or flawed in comparison with what was intended to be done by the creator. While the first half of this argument is true to an extent, that extent is very short. It effectively ignores the reality of what video games have become in all their variety. The majority of modern popular video games contain the most central elements of movies and television shows by way of their graphics, the most central elements of books by way of their included lore and fully fleshed out backstory, and the most central elements of music by way of their included score and soundtrack, each of which influence human decisions, although not necessarily political ones, in some way or form, especially the aforementioned movie and TV elements. This is related to a phrase that can be used to describe the entire purpose of film. That phrase is show, don't tell. This principle of show, don't tell is what political cartoons are all about, which are, as the name suggests, very political. It is also one of the most important aspects of any successful video game. The important thing to note about show, don't tell is that whereas text almost always provides a singular definition of what it says, visual communication can be interpreted in multiple different ways and can generate vastly different reactions from person to person. In regards to the part of this opposition describing video games as pure entertainment, there is in fact a good deal of truth to that. It would be impossible to label video games entirely as works of art and visual landscapes and other long-winded poetic titles like that. In many cases, video games are just a stress reliever. But this fact doesn't diminish video games' capability to influence political activity. This, in fact, reinforces it. As video games are so commonly identified as places that one can let their guard down and do things that they wouldn't be able to do in real life, people do just that. More importantly, players say things that they would never say in real life. Things that are usually very extreme. This extreme speech is then made audible to everyone else who is present by way of the voice chat feature that was mentioned previously. The ease with which someone is able to express their radical ideas to people whose ideals are the exact opposite of their own leaves a lasting impression with the listeners, giving them more reason in their minds to defend their own positions. Ultimately, the result of each of these factors coming into play simultaneously, as described using the human beings involved, is large numbers of people with vastly varying opinions who also very adamantly depend those opinions that they have. So, to summarize, large multiplayer games create an environment where people are able to interact with people whose political ideals are opposite to their own, and who are also expressing those ideals in a way that is much less restrained than they would ever be in real life. while all of this is made easily accessible for other people around the world to hear. As for the second half of this argument, although it may be true that the intended messages made by game developers can be flawed when they are displayed via the video game's final product, this accusation once again does little to disprove the previously stated thesis that video games influence human political activity. The messages made public through video games are capable of influencing human political beliefs, whether or not the message is true to what the developer intended. One of the best examples of that influence is the upcoming video game 6 Days in Fallujah, a first-person shooter game that is described by its developers as more of an interactive documentary than a first-person shooter, intended to generate sympathy for the veterans who served during the conflict in Iraq, specifically the American soldiers who fought in the Second Battle of Fallujah, as well as the refugees who struggled to escape the city and survive the fighting. The developers in question conducted interviews with more than 100 service members and 23 Iraqis who lived in the city of Fallujah to provide real testimony in order to achieve their goal of creating an innovative way to recount the conflict, quote, with authenticity and respect, end quote. In an article by CNN, the premise of the game was met with firm disapproval from many Arab Americans who experienced the violent conflict firsthand, stating that it trivializes the suffering that they had endured. Despite the good intent of the developers failing to deliver in the final product, legitimate discourse and debate was generated all the same. The subjects that have been featured thus far display the effect of video games have on the broader populace, observing the commonalities among large quantities of people when it comes to their political tendencies. So, where can video games be seen having an effect on the political activity of leaders, the high-ranking government officials that have a larger influence in the world? That would begin with the Trump presidency. In 2019, specifically in the wake of the mass shootings that took place in Dayton, Ohio, and El Paso, Texas, former President Trump made a public address in which he connected video games to the glorification of violence in the United States. The Forbes article that this is sourced from notes that the popularity of video games has only risen since the 90s, while, at the same time, instances of youth homicide have decreased since then. The main takeaway from that point is that the evidence to support the argument that video games do not have any significant role in causing violent tendencies but it also indicates something else. Given the time frame, starting in the 90s, Americans have spent decades arguing whether or not video games cause violence, in that very broad term. Evidently long enough for a U.S. president to take a stand on the matter. A short time later, during the election just before Joe Biden took office, his campaign featured a form of advertisement that had seldom been used before. A form of advertisement in the online social world-building game Animal Crossing New Horizons, a game in which players can construct and customize their own islands and invite other players to visit. Biden's campaign did just that, constructing an island that was named Biden HQ, in which there were objects and signs indicating how to vote in the presidential election and how to become more involved in real life. This strategy of trying to better connect with younger generations via video games not only reiterates how commonplace video games are in developed society, but also shows that they influence decisions made by both ends of the common liberal-conservative political spectrum, by both positive and negative reactions, the latter of which is displayed in many countless political cartoons. One of these comics was created by a conservative artist and accuses Americans, in this case mainly liberals, of completely ignoring what they believe to be the primary cause of gun violence: video games. Although the tone of this cartoon displays a very clear sense of disdain against the prevalence of violent video games from a very conservative perspective, the creation of cartoons such as these are still entirely dependent on the existence of video games that are being debated over. They are drawn as a reaction to the very existence of video games. These impressions made upon government officials about video games are not exclusive to the United States. Far from it. The events that have been included thus far have taken place almost exclusively in the United States. But the influence of video games extends across the world. In one case, this influence appears in the strained political scene of China. As detailed in an article by IRPP earlier in the year 2020, before Biden HQ was launched, pro-democracy protesters in the city of Hong Kong were forced indoors due to the COVID-19 pandemic and also the zero-tolerance COVID policy of the Chinese government. Determined to continue their efforts and spread their message, these protesters created virtual islands in Animal Crossing, the same game mentioned previously. These islands included photos of the paramount leader of China, Xi Jinping, and chief executive officer of Hong Kong, Carrie Lam, as well as banners that read, quote, "Free Hong Kong, Revolution Now," end quote. While this part of the story can already function as another example of the prevalence of video games being seen as an ideal medium for expressing political content, this is not the end of the story. A different article by The Guardian later detailed that the Communist Party of China shortly thereafter banned the game Animal Crossing New Horizons and removed it from the country's online markets for being used to criticize the state. This reaction to video games being used to express dissent towards the government in power shows that even those with the highest levels of authority have had their executive decisions influenced by video games. Having taken everything into account, one of the most important aspects of video games that allows them to be as influential as they are is the sheer variety of things that a video game can be. They form a large industry with economic stability. They are social gathering spaces in which people voice their opinions in ways that they never would in real life, generating strong opinions that those people then carry with them in real life. They are a medium through which developers attempt to display messages. And lastly, they are a means by which large populations work to change the policies that govern them, and a means by which world leaders in power work to influence the worldly populations that they govern. Works cited, IBIS World Industry Market Research Reports and Statistics. Is Tesla stock high risk? USA stocks, TSLA, macro axis. Ala LSR, Iraq's bloodiest battle will be a video game via CNN. Show, don't tell. Why the screenwriting mantra endures. Industrial scripts. Show, don't tell. Why the screenwriting mantra endures. Joshua Faust. Video games are the new contested space for public policy. The Brookings Institution. Lisette Voitko. Trump suggests video games connected to violence. Research doesn't support that. Dakota Trithara. How online gaming is a growing tool for political mobilization. Sarah Nove. Politics and video games are more linked than you might think. Ala Elisar, Joe Biden has his own island on Animal Crossing where you can learn about his campaign via CNN Business. Helen Davidson, Animal Crossing game removed from sale in China over Hong Kong democracy messages. The Guardian. Akbar Kusumasari et al. Making public policy fun. How political aspects and policy issues are found in video games.
You're listening to the Student Hour. Student voices from Portland, for Portland. Powered by AM 1450, KBPS.
Hey, KBPS 1450, this is Ileana. And this is my final project. I would like to talk about my freshman year to my senior year. And I feel like one of the things I really noticed is just, like, when I think about my high school career, my freshman year, I think about if I've grown or not. In ways, if I'm doing good in school or not, if I'm doing good in basketball or not. I always did what, like, I could in, like, high school, like, on any subject. I always did what I could, but, like, if I struggled with something, I was never comfortable with, like, speaking up for myself or anything, so I would, like, let myself, you know, like, just struggle in ways. And, you know, like, I played basketball, so that's really why I came to Benson to play basketball. Because my coach, Eric Knox, as you guys know, he introduced me to Benson and, you know, his black and brown girls community. And I really looked in, like, just the work he does. But I always just, you know, just let myself get really far behind until I had to catch myself up. And I would, but it would just be a consistent thing throughout, you know, like, freshman year to senior year. And I just want to talk about that because I feel like, you know, if you don't talk about it, you can't overcome that or you can't fix, you know, that habit which you have. And I realized the habit that I have is, you know, not having consistency. I don't have consistency. Like, I will do something for a little period of time and then I'll stop. And that's something I need to fix. I need to change because I need to have consistency. And I feel like not even just with school, like with basketball too. Like, I think, like, when I was younger, I'd be so excited to go to practice and just do so much. But after a while, like, I just stopped being consistent with going to practice every day. I stopped being consistent with, you know, just staying in touch with people. And that's something I need to work on. And I feel like my goal for, you know, for here on out to, you know, when I go to college, we'll just for the rest of my life, just being consistent with myself, being consistent with my priorities and what I need to do to stay successful. And that's something I'm going to do. I'm excited to go into Hofstra and, you know, showcase what I can do, you know, just not just academically, but, like, you know, on the court and off the court. You know, I want to start my business there, show them that I'm not just, you know, an athlete, I'm a businesswoman too. And I'm excited to showcase that and start my life and my career and my personal path and business. And it was crazy because I was supposed to leave May 21st, but I'm not going to, even though I can because I have all my credits. I have all my credits, so I could have done so. but I'm not going to, because I feel like it's important to finish out your high school career. And I feel like it's really important for me to really walk across the stage, because I'm the first one to do it in my family. Like my grandmother, I live with my grandmother. I've always lived with my grandmother. She's the first actually one to do it in my family. It was only her. None of my aunties, my uncles, none of my cousins have graduated. They all like dropped out or they got their GED or something, you know? So I'm gonna be the actual first one to do it. I remember I was talking to my granny and I was telling her that I wanted to, you know, leave early. Like I'm ready to go. I'm tired of the family, everything. Like I'm just ready to go. I'm ready to start my life and everything. And she just told me, she was just like, I could tell she was sad. I could see the little tears in her eyes, but she wasn't gonna let them fall. But I could tell that she didn't want to go. She was just telling me, like, I feel like since you're going to be the only one to really do it, I feel like you should just walk across the stage. I want to see at least one of my kids, grandchildren, to actually walk across the stage. And I feel like that's what I really want to do. I want to finish out school, fun with, you know, my teachers. Shout out to Mr. Jacob. You're a good teacher, and I appreciate you. And, you know, my teammates, my sisters, my friends, you know, all the people that supported me. And I feel like it's just really important for me to walk across that stage. Because when I think about it, like, I have so many tattoos, and they all represent something. And this one tattoo, I got this off my shoebox, actually. And it says, always remember when they doubted you. And that's exactly what I'm going to post on my Instagram after I take my Instagram pictures. Because a lot of people didn't think I was going to graduate. A lot of people thought I was going to drop out, be a gang member, and all this other stuff. And that's not even me. Like, one thing about me, like, I did let it affect me for so long. But, like, I didn't let it, like, affect me in, like, bad ways where I was going to do wrong, hurt people, or just anything. Like, yeah, I was tired. Sometimes I was slacking. But I was just, like, at the end of the day, like, I'm finna do it. At the end of the day, like, this is what I want. I want to play basketball. Everybody thinks this of me, but I know what it is at the end of the day. I'm, you know, working my ass off. I'm, you know, trying to do what I have to do. Wake up at 4 in the morning, sometimes 3 in the morning, 6 in the morning, 7 in the morning. I know a lot of people is not doing that. And I was just like, just got to keep going. Life thrown so many things at me, but just going to keep going. I'm going to keep going and keep pushing, because no matter how hard life gets, it keeps going. And I don't want to waste time. I really want to make a name for myself and, like, you know, like, honestly show people the other side of me. Like, a lot of people think I'm mean, I'm mugging, or a gang member and all this other stuff, probably because I have so many tattoos and all this other stuff. Or, like, I just come off as rude because, like, my facial expressions. But I'm really sweet, genuine, if you get to know me for real. I have a big heart. I care a lot about people. I want everybody to do good, get close to God, stay connected to God. I don't think disrespecting people is cute. Only, like, I feel like I only disrespect people when I'm disrespected, because respect is given. Respect is earned, not given. And, yeah, but when I just think about it, like, it's crazy. I have only so much little time left. I leave for college June 6th, right in the morning, right after graduation, because my coach said that during the basketball season, when I had twist my ankle, well, I really feel like I sprained it. When I sprained my ankle, I was out for a month. I couldn't do nothing at all. Like, just walking on it hurt so bad. And she said, like, she could tell that I wasn't in shape or nothing. So when I come out, she wants to make sure I'm in perfect shape, everything, and just ready to go and just ahead of everybody else. And, you know, like, just vibe and just see what it's like out there. And I'm excited. Like, I really am. And I'm ready to start my life and just have fun. Like, my family is so toxic and it's draining. And I'm just ready to go. And it makes me sad because I don't want to leave my sisters or my granny, because, like, I'm just like, I really love the mess out of my granny. Like, that's literally my heart. That is my mother, my everything. And I just know, like, if something goes wrong, if something happens, I'm just not going to be able to just be right there to help. And I feel like that's one of the things I'm most scared of, to go. But I know I can't hold my life back for nobody.
and I won't think it's hard. I pray God to, you know, give it to him and pray that everything is okay. Pray for my family and pray that they change from their ways. Seriously, I just want better and go to God because he is the way. But I feel like my future is really going to be good if I stay on the right path, and I know I will because I really don't seek it for attention or, like, you know, just for people, you know? Like, if they come, they come. If they don't, they don't, you know? Like, I'm not tripping. Because, like, really all my life I've always been alone. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, you know, I have nothing, there's nothing wrong with being alone. And I'm okay with that. I found peace with it. But I'm excited. I'm ready to do this. Prom is on Saturday, and I'm just like, I don't even know. My shoes don't match my suit, so I'm in a pickle. But we're going to see how it goes. I think it's going to be really fun. I'm just excited to end this school year off, and I just want to end it on a good note. Because when I think about my year, like, oh my goodness, I know a lot of people my year went through it because of COVID. We're only freshmen, and just going towards the end of our freshman year, COVID hit us and we was out for a while. And that was tough. Like, I know a lot of people went through it just being at home with their parents, because you don't ever know what people at home go through with their parents. But I just want to say, like, I'm really proud of this year, this 2023 year, everybody. Like, we made it. We did it. We pushed through. And I'm proud of all of us. Even if I don't know y'all, I'm proud of y'all. And I'm proud of y'all. But that's really it.
If you'd like to support the Student Hour, please consider donating to our program at kbps.am and donating to our sponsors, Portland Radio Project. Your support of PRP helps programs like the Student Hour stay on the air. For more information, go to prp.fm and click on the big red heart. KBPS on PRP is now the Student Hour. The Student Hour, highlighting student voices from around Portland and beyond. The Student Hour is powered by AM 1450 KBPS at Benson High School. Full episodes of the Student Hour are available on our website, kbps.am. On air since 1923, KBPS is the voice of the Portland Public Schools. Thanks to our supporters, Portland Radio Project, 99.1 FM, and streaming worldwide at prp.fm. And thanks to our listeners like you. This concludes our show for today. Thanks for joining us.